Today we sit down with Brooke Kane of Kane Investments. Brooke is a wealth of knowledge and a good storyteller as well, and it's just a kind, giving person. I had the opportunity to have lunch with Brooke about a month ago, and that was a fantastic experience. And I asked him to come on the show to provide some inspiration and some practical value to the listener. He's been in land development, rehabs, all kind of ground up construction, primarily in Maryland, and done many different things in real estate investing over the several decades. And but he's discovered private lending or hard money lending about 13 years ago or so, and he raves about it. So we don't get too far into the weeds on how to do a hard money loan or how to do private lending, but his story is just really fascinating, and he's clearly someone who wants to give back, and just he's just a very generous person, a kind soul, you can tell. And you're going to want to listen to this if you have any interest in private lending, if you have any interest in, why that may be a better fit than other asset classes or strategies within real estate investing. And if you just want general wisdom, there's something at the very end that there's just a powerful statement that he made, an observation that he's made from living 75 years, about the power of relationships and the power of making an impact on other people. And just I really, really thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I think you will too.
From adversity to abundance, hosted by entrepreneur and seasoned real estate investor Jamie Bateman, is the ultimate guide for active and passive investors seeking clarity, mental fitness, and the confidence to make inspired decisions in the world of real estate. With a decade plus of investing experience across various niches and a background as a combat veteran, former Army officer, and multi-million dollar mortgage note company owner, Jamie brings a wealth of knowledge and inspiring stories to each episode. Through weekly episodes featuring insightful interviews with industry leaders and solo explorations of mindset and strategy, listeners will uncover actionable advice and tips to overcome challenges and build lasting financial success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, From Adversity to Abundance is your roadmap to turning obstacles into opportunities and achieving financial freedom.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman. And today we have with us Brooke Kane. Brooke is a Baltimore, Maryland area private lender, and he's done a lot of different things in real estate. Brooke is the owner of Kane Investments. Brooke, how are you doing today?
Good day, Jamie, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I know you have a ton of stories and a ton of knowledge and a ton of inspiration to provide to the listener. So, I think that the challenge here will be to, for me to be able to focus the conversation because there's so much. I feel like we could probably have five or six episodes, based on your wealth of knowledge. But for the listener who may not be familiar with you, who are you today? What are you up to today? And what is some of the abundance that you're experiencing today?
Today, I'm almost 76 years old. I'm partially retired. I tried to go fully retired January 1st of this year and transition the business over to one of our employees, Carrie Martinez, which we have done. And I thought I could really just step away, okay, which I can, but I thought I could really get away from the business. And that lasted almost to February of this year.
Okay, so almost a month.
Yeah. And then I
That's
said,
funny.
ew, I don't like this retirement even a little bit.
Okay.
So I kind of got more back involved a little bit with it. But basically, we've transitioned from being a hard money lender, loaning to individuals, investors who are doing rehabs, resales, sometimes rentals, buy and holds. And over the years, I've been blessed with having helped other people in some small ways get into the business, mainly through inspiration and having lunch with them at Deepest Qualities.
And,
like you and I did a few years ago. Right. And inspired them to look at the business, because I'm such an evangelist and a believer in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've started transitioning away from lending to individuals and lending larger amounts to these hard money lenders like mm-hmm. I used to be. So
okay.
I'm more, you might describe me now as more of a capital investor. I think
Got
that's
it.
A term that's
yes.
kind of used in the
Absolutely.
Industry.
Yep.
Than a direct hard money lender.
Okay.
Okay.
Makes sense.
I lend to those lenders.
Okay.
And it makes the business a little simpler. You don't
sure.
have, because we had like 45, 50 borrowers, you know, checks coming in every month. And
yeah.
it's a lot of management. Okay.
Sure.
Now we have 7 or 8, 9 checks coming in. So
okay.
that's where I'm at today.
Okay. Perfect. So, and to be clear, you got drawn back into some level of active investing, but that was primarily because you didn't like retirement. It wasn't so much that, you know, I don't want to say the business didn't need you, but it was more that you didn't like retirement. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I needed the business. I needed
okay,
the
all
action.
Right, all right.
Know, I'm kind of an action guy,
yeah.
and I miss the action.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's
I miss
fair.
The making deals, solving problems, coming up with new ideas.
Right.
Hearing stories from other people, that's the big
right.
deal. As you know, I enjoy, you know, meeting people at lunch. And, you know, I was going to say, well, after a while, they don't want to hear about my investment in the stock market. And, you know, you know, I got no, if I don't have stories to tell, then we're good.
Yeah,
why do you want to have lunch with me? Right?
I don't know. That was a pretty good Italian cold cut. And
yeah, that's true. That's
but
true.
The conversation is what made it. But, you know, I guess, you know, and you can be as specific as you want, obviously. But how has real estate investing and private lending made your life more financially abundant?
Straight up, with the businesses that I've been in, all in real estate, whether it's mm-hmm. land development, home building, rehabbing, mm-hmm. whatever phase, I have never been around. Now, again, I didn't graduate from Wharton or Harvard Law or any of that kind of crap, but I'm saying it's a good,
right.
wish I had,
right.
but I don't mean it negatively, but I just
right.
didn't have that opportunity. But of the businesses that I've been associated with, nothing, you know, has made two things. One has made the income
mm-hmm.
with what I feel is exceptionally run right, run conservatively, run tight,
mm-hmm.
A very constrained risk profile.
Okay.
Because that's the first thing people will ask you. Oh man, isn't that risky? Well, if you don't pay attention,
sure.
and don't do the right kind of set up the right kind of business, yeah, it
right,
can be.
Right.
Okay.
Sure.
But I've not been around a business. And again, when I first came to Baltimore, I had no idea what hard money was. I didn't
right.
know what the term meant.
Right.
I thought, well, shit, every bit of hard money, every bit of money I ever made seemed like hard money to me. And when I got to know the business more,
it was
phenomenal from a cash generation income
mm-hmm.
standpoint,
right?
Coupled with, you know, having very constrained risk.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Very constrained risk.
Got it. Well, it sounds like you could have retired years ago, but you love it too much, basically, is what I'm gathering.
You know, I love how it inspires and perpetuates great relationships.
It's a great,
okay, because
yeah.
you're involved with people's business. Let me turn this damn thing off. You're involved with people's business. When you get a certain amount of gray hair and the calendars have flipped a certain number of times, people listen to your stories like you know something, which makes an old guy feel really good. They actually listen to what I'm saying, right?
Right.
And some of that's based on advice and hard knocks mm-hmm. and all that. So
yeah.
It makes me feel good.
Sure.
For sure. but it I've just found it to be really for me, with my frame of reference, a fantastic business.
Nice. So it sounds like you've got a lot of time freedom and financial freedom at this point. So, yeah. But I know it wasn't always that way. So let's jump back and discuss some of the, particularly the downs that you've been through. And maybe, you know, I think you have a potentially a story to tell about someone else's story actually to tell. But talk about some of the hardship that you've been through in your background, you know, maybe whether in real estate directly or otherwise.
And I'll use that story we talked about before we jumped on the air or started recording. And this was a friend of mine in Florida, and we had a place down there at the time. This was in the early, I don't know, 11, 12, something like that, or actually even earlier than that, 08, 09. As I look back, and this guy, it was a cousin of my friend, and we had dinner with him. Nice guy. Okay. Very transparent. Mm-hmm. And he was a player. I mean, he was president of, I forget the gentleman's name, but just a great guy, some big corporation. And that was a big supplier to parts to GM. And so the guy had done well.
Sure.
Started in a garage fixing alternators in Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay.
And I asked him, I said, what were those times in life, you know, where you really, because he jumped up and we went by his condo and his was much more handsome than mine was. So nice. He had done very, very well.
Yeah.
And I said, what, let's call the guy Dan. I said, Dan, what were those moments in your career looking back when you made those jumps? In other words, when you went from A to Z, I mean, you really made those to get from a busting up alternators. That's a part of an engine, I believe.
Yeah.
In Virginia to this, you know, to where you are today. And he says, that's a great question. And when I look back in that context, what I found, what now that I think about it, the times where I made those, I'll call it meteoric, you know, substantial jumps.
Right. Like a big, like an inflection point or some kind of.
That's a perfect, way to put it. Was it the times things looked the worst?
Okay.
And he went on to tell some stories. You know, he sold his business, you know, at a fairly young age. He had built it up. Bunch of money on the takeout, took a lot of it back in stock. These guys ran it into the ground. He said, "Jay, I had to come back in." And it was the best thing he ever did, because he bought the stock back at a you know, what it wasn't worth much. And he bought it back, got those guys, and then it just took off. And then there was two or three of these inflection points, like you say, Jamie, that made all the difference. And I'll never forget that story because this was before we had decided to come to Baltimore.
Okay.
Which we did in August of 11.
You were down in Southern Maryland?
I was in Calvert County.
Okay.
You know, compared to Baltimore, a galaxy far, far away. And if you're in the growth business, you know, like build houses or cut up ground, do not, under any circumstances, go to Calvert County.
That's funny.
So we had been in the building business. My dad had been in the business. I got into it, you know, basically it was a simple dynamic. We would buy a farm or a woodland, whatever, a piece of ground, 100, 200 acres, cut it up into lots, subdivide it, what they call down there developing, you know, up here they use developing as different terms.
Okay.
And then we put the streets in and all that stuff and build the houses. Okay. And then go find another farm, cut it up, boom, same process, rinse and repeat.
Right.
And we grew it. We were only doing 25, 30 houses a year, but down there, that's quite a bit. And, you know, but it got more and more difficult, not because of market. Not, I could handle market fluctuation. Didn't like them, but that's part of the deal.
Sure.
I could not beat government. Government got worse and worse. And the people that moved to Calvert County, okay, are people that don't want change. I mean, inherently, none of us want change. I got
Sure.
None of us. We all like the steady.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Okay. But what I ran up against was that these, the the politicians, the local county commissioners would run on a no-growth platform. Okay, we're no more traffic lights, no more people, no more growth, no right. more, no more, no more. And that was a very compelling argument for votes because the people that came down there right. wanted to get away from that. So each and every administration would take another bite out of the growth apple and made my life more and more difficult, often changing the rules after you bought the ground under one set of rules.
Wow.
And in the meantime, yeah. you know, you got new changes. Because they all want to take a chance, you know, to say it happened on their watch.
Right.
So
right,
government,
right.
while it didn't put me out of business, I realized in 07, 08, not just because the market was, the projects I was working in, I had about four different communities,
mm-hmm.
and not one of them, not one of those communities, and I developed all of them, you know, I cut the ground up on all, not one of those communities could I cut lots up in under the existing rules that I was facing. So every lot that I sold
mm-hmm.
was like going into Deep Pasquale's and grabbing out the last bottle of olive oil off the shelf. You know, eventually you're out of the Italian market business, right?
Right.
And
right.
I could see, you know, I was, what was I, 58 then, 59? Yeah, I was born in 50. I could see, you know, you're thinking about not retirement, but just how this is going to wind up when I can't
sure. yeah.
run
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah, you're looking forward. Yeah, sure.
And it didn't look good.
Didn't.
Okay. I mean, mm-hmm. I wasn't going to go broke, but I sure as hell wasn't going to be, it was going to be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
And I said to the same, you know, it got to be like February. I'll never forget it. February of 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in bad shape mentally. The market was bad. You know, the business was going okay, but I could see down. I couldn't not see further down the road. And when I did, it made me, you know, walk on the floors. Okay. And I'll tell you, this is the honest to God story. Same mm-hmm. guy who introduced me to his cousin,
mm-hmm. yeah,
Glenn Walker, was over for dinner one night, cold February night.
Okay.
And I had been looking at different places to get out of Calvert County because that's the only place I was in. And I went to St. Paul's School as a boarding student up here in Baltimore. My wife's from Pikesville. So we had some Baltimore connect.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Glenn, I said, I got to get out of here, man. I said, they're killing, you know, I'm going to die on the vine. Mm-hmm. And I really think I want to go to Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it entails, but they got to have more lots up there, more people up there. I don't know sure. what I'm going to do, but there's got to be better than here.
right.
And I'll never forget. He says, what's stopping you from moving now? And I just. And I knew what's stopping me, and it was guts. 2 weeks later, I bought the house over here on Alisana. Okay?
Okay.
And we moved 6 months later after it was rehabbed and everything.
Okay.
Scared to death. And that was my moment that I related so well to the guy we had dinner with three or four.
Right.
four.
Well, it sounds
that
like.
I was afraid. I was scared. It was a low point.
Sure.
But it became. It just became I would not be here where I am today.
Yeah.
Had Glenn not called me out.
Right. Well, I think that's there's so many things, you know, takeaways from that story, but you know, we need people in our lives who will challenge us sometimes, you know, peers and friends and, you know, fellow investors, whoever it is, but you know, that has a lot of value to it for sure. But you needed to be open to hearing it too, you know?
And sometimes you've got to just hold your nose and drop off, you know, jump off the end of the board.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, talk about that for a minute, because it's not, you know, I have my own opinions on, I don't think there's a science to this, right? You know, when should someone take that leap and make a change like that in their life? I mean, on one hand, you can't wait for the stars to all align, but on the other hand, you don't want to be, you know, too risky, right? So how do you know whether it's quitting a W-2 job to go into your own business, or whether it's making a move like you did geographically and then into a different real estate industry, really a different strategy? How do you know when that's the right time, you know, it's the right time to make that move?
If you wait until the stars are lined up,
mm-hmm.
just understand that's going to be too late, whatever the time frame is. It's mm-hmm. never, people are risk aversive.
Yeah.
By nature, they are sure. risk averse. People want mm-hmm. constant. People want the status quo. It's just human nature.
Right.
So it's never going to be easy. And I will maintain the greater the risk, the greater the reward. Mm. Okay. Not everybody can buy into that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I grew up with, or, you know, my dad was in the real estate. I mean, so I was more comfortable with risk maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Than a lot of people, but nevertheless, at the time, it. I also learned at an earlier age that more is to be lost by indecision than a bad decision. And I'll explain why.
Yeah.
Indecision is where most people are. And I'm not saying anything wrong, but it's just human nature.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I found that when you wait and some people say, well, I'm not going to decide to do that today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they think they haven't made a decision. Yeah, you have. You've made a decision. You're not going to get out of that.
Right.
You've made a decision not to decide.
That's a great point.
But it's a decision nonetheless. It doesn't feel like it because it doesn't hurt as much as taking the risk.
Yeah. I don't want to get sidetracked but I've been watching, for whatever reason, my YouTube feed's been, I had a lot of videos about religious debates about religion, I should, you know, and it's just interesting because the truth is, if you are an agnostic or an atheist, and we're not, we don't need to get too far into this, but you've made a decision, at least for now, about what you believe. So that's a great point.
And what I found, you say, well, Jesus, if I make a bad decision, if I make too quick of a decision, because a lot of people say, well, I should have thought it over more.
Right.
Look, most decisions can be pulled back.
Mm.
You can correct. This isn't like, hey, I'm going to decide to put the noose around my neck and ask the guy, where do I stand so you can drop me clean? Most decisions can mm-hmm. be modified, shifted, or something. It's not the end of your life or the world.
Right.
Okay. So much more is to be lost mm-hmm. by trying to overthink it, you know, microscope type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. And I know that's easy to say.
Right.
But if you don't do it, don't expect great wins to come your way.
Yeah.
They just won't.
There's a lot of opportunity cost there, right? If you make a decision not to make a decision, basically, then you're not, or make a decision not to take action. What did you miss out on that you could have gained, right? So when you moved to Baltimore, what changed for you with your perspective, your business? How did things change over the course of the next 10, 15 years?
I came up thinking that there were more lots in the county, more opportunities there. So I bought some lots out of foreclosure with, I think, M&T Bank had taken some back from a guy.
Okay.
So I bought some lots, and then I hooked up with a young man, Tyler Banks, very good friend to this day, and we formed Charm City Builders, which is basically a rehab company.
Okay.
And I was funding him.
Okay.
One of his primary funders. Okay. I had another person who was a superintendent for me who built the houses. These cases were townhouses out in the county. And so I was going to run a inside and outside, I called it, you know, in the city with rehabs, a typical row house situation,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then new stuff on the outside because I had access to more ground than I did in Calvert.
Okay.
And then I started to understand that whether you're building up here or in Calvert, it's the same. I didn't want that business anymore.
Right.
The rehab business wasn't too bad, especially where my side of it was basically in the funding.
Right.
But, and then I'd put up the money, he'd find the house, we'd build it, you know, he would oversee the construction, we split the profits when we sold it.
Okay.
I was charging 6% on the money because I had to have somebody move it around. I wasn't doing the accounting. Christine, my second, was doing that. And I needed some kind of offset for her cost. But I found after 2 or 3 years, some of the deals I made more on the 6% than I made on the split and the profit that didn't exist. Wow. Right.
Okay.
So I got used to, you know, understanding that there was another world out there called this private lending. Mm-hmm. And I started to see some of the returns that these guys were making. And I look back on my own experience in land development and home building. And even though I lost monies like buku on certain land deals or houses, go whatever, mm-hmm. you know who never lost? The bank.
The bank
never lost.
Right.
Oh, Jesus. That's right. The business. So that I made my first non-Tyler loan, you know, because I was exclusively lending to him.
Yeah.
In April of 14. And we did 20 that first year or so. And I finished up my last year that I was actively involved in it before it turned it over to Carrie. I think it was 24. We did like 240 loans. I mean, the thing blew up.
Wow.
Okay. And I will tell you to this day, it seems that most of that business came off the tables with Deepa Squalies, because that's where I would meet people. That's where I would develop relationships that developed into lending relationships.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things I want to ask about. Well, first, you know, so how did your perspective change? I mean, from that February night when you were really down and out, I mean, it's more than one night, but you were, sounds like, not in a good place, you know, financially, but probably more importantly, you know, mental health wise and just perspective on the future. How did, was it, what you really, what turned that around? Was it, you know, was it, how did that all happen? Was it over the course of time, or did you change your mindset and then the money started coming in, or how did that process look when you look back?
I had a few bucks that we came to the, up to the city with. That's what I was using with Tyler, you know, Tyler and I were,
right.
And then I said, hey, I think I want to do more, you know, I'll still continue to fund you.
Yeah.
But not exclusively. And I ask around a Deepa Squalies.
Okay.
Anybody else need money? And a lot of hands went up.
So I imagine as traction was, you got traction, then you got momentum on the private lending side. And then it's easier to see the future, right? And you're seeing more abundance in your own life. And you see this business model working, proof of concept. So, that's really cool. So, all right. So how many years have you done private lending for approximately?
Call it 15, 2014 and a half, 2000, let's say 15. And okay. It'd be like, from 14 to where we are now, 16, 26. So what's that? 12 years,
12 years, 12 years? 13 years. Yep, yeah. Something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. And now, and, you know, we do mostly first lien mortgage notes. We buy defaulted paper. We also buy reperforming loans. We buy some seconds. We bought some land notes, but I'm a note buyer and I'm looking at getting into private lending. This isn't just hypothetical. Want to start building that side of things as well. The new thing for me and for probably a good number of my listeners is, so I run a note fund, and the three elements really to running a note fund, the three legs of the stool are, finding capital, you know, raising capital, finding deals to buy, finding notes. So, you know, and then we there's a whole process there. And then the third leg is managing those two things, so managing the capital and managing the assets. It's really no different, you know, if you zoom out, it's really no different on the private lending side. Except when you zoom in a little bit, you got to find borrowers. You're not finding notes to buy. So you've got to find borrowers to lend to. So I think I know the answer to this, but what was your main strategy to finding borrowers to lend to?
The overarching reality, at least for us, was that deals find money.
Okay.
If you have money, whether it's borrowed from capital investors, people like me at this point in my career,
right.
Or your own cash.
Yeah.
HELOC on your house, a reasonable HELOC on your house. IRA money. Okay. Yeah. Whatever source you've got money to lend.
Right.
If you put yourself out there, okay, letting people know that you've got money to lend, believe me, it's like mosquitoes, you know, on a warm sunny night or a warm summer night.
Right.
They'll find you. They'll find you. It doesn't mean you have to, you still have got to vet, you still have got to nurture the relationships. And the way, what you want to do is work with the same people over and over and over again that you like, trust, and respect.
Yeah.
And that's how you, you know, you build the business up and they like, trust, and respect you.
Yeah.
And you've got a strong relationship.
Well, yeah.
You, it's less, it's more of a challenge of finding the capital to lend than it is finding the borrowers to borrow.
Right. Okay.
Because at least that's the way it's been for us.
Got it. Yeah, that's a, probably that debate will never, never die as far as in the real estate world, you know, which, deals find deals attract capital or capital attracts deals. But what I heard from you too, is it's a relationship business. And, I mean, that's, it sounds like just through your lunches that you schedule, but also just word of mouth and just everyday conversations, you're just, like you said, putting yourself out there. It's not a ton of marketing, right? Like actual, paid marketing or unpaid marketing. It's more just kind of, you know, word of mouth. Is that fair to say, at least from your experience?
You know, yes. And that sounds overly, that sounds like an overly simplified answer to that. But I look back, the only thing I can tell you is how we grew our business.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Or how our business grew.
Right.
Because it sounds like when you say how we grew it, it sounds like they're Facebook or truly. Now we have a Facebook thing. We got a website. Somebody said a couple of years ago it was down for 6 months. We didn't know.
That's funny.
That has not been outreach, has not been the source of our growth.
Okay.
You say, well, what has?
Right.
The only other thing that we do is nurture those relationships. And I swear I look back on it and it's deep as quiet. I mean, that's the only thing that we've done consistently.
Yeah.
And we don't do it because, hey, I'm going to have lunch so I can get a deal. No, I want to meet people and hear their stories.
Right.
And out of that,
if you can help each other out, then great.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That, so if you say marketing, which is very labor intensive and time intensive.
Sure.
All that. But I don't know what else did it. I don't think it just grew.
Right.
Because we had access to money.
Right.
I think that didn't hurt.
Right.
But I mean, we went from 20 to 200 and almost 250 loans.
Yeah.
That something went on.
Right.
And it wasn't Facebook or media or social media or any of that. I can tell you it wasn't that because we didn't spend any money on that.
Yeah. I've had the same experience in my own business with, you know, I do mentorship for newer node investors and a lot of them struggle to find deals initially, even though I'm trying to help them find deals. But it's because they don't have the relationships yet, because, you know, that's my primary source of notes is fellow investors and people I've bought from before. And it's just my network. And then same thing on the capital side with our fund investors, our, you know, strongest or most fruitful source of capital is actually our current investors. And maybe somebody they recommended, you know, recommended us to, you know, and we do marketing, but because people will Google you and they want to see that you're out there, and you know, it's one
reason. You have to have some kind of presence.
Exactly.
I understand it.
Right. But that's not, people don't just see an Instagram reel and then send you money. At least that hasn't been my experience. So
no, I think you've got to be face to face. And I like when there's a real Italian sitting in the middle on the table, you know, that's a great sandwich.
It sure is. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So I do have some questions for you. Some additional questions that we ask, you know, other guests, but before we get there, where's, you already talked about your business now. Where do you see your business headed in the future?
I'll continue. I'm happy again. I wasn't happy in January. As long as I can still bring value, and I don't mean value in terms of dollars, but in terms of advice or insight or ideation, you know, at some point, you know, mentally, you know, age is what it is. And where, when I reach that point, whatever it is, health wise or mental or physical or mental, then you give it to the wealth advisor, okay, stock guy, right? And you hang up your spurs. I mean, because you can no longer deliver value other than just money,
right?
Then I would probably step away, you know, from what I'm doing now and be even more passive.
Got it.
Well, and I probably wouldn't know I'm doing it. So that at that point, I'm fine. But right now, I'm going to run it as long as I can. That I can provide help for people, and make a buck along the way.
Okay. How about for private lenders in general? You know, who maybe they're in a different market, but what's changed over the 12, 13 years you've been doing private lending, and where do you see things going in the industry?
I see, even though the business is very fragmented now, there's a, you know, the vast majority of private lenders, hard money lenders, whatever you want to call them, are smaller operations, but there's more and more lenders that are, you know, have a national presence, and they're getting bigger. I still think there will always be a market out there for private lending of whatever size you want to make it, whether you got 100,000, half a million, or 10 million, there'll be someone that wants money.
Okay.
That wants the convenience of dealing with a human rather than a bank.
Right.
Can deliver speed, because that's basically what we sell.
Right. Right.
You know, turning of the money, providing the funds in a timely fashion, that type of thing. I still think there will be that. I eventually see, and it's not yet, there's some talk in New York where you have to get licensed if you do loans of less than half a million. And the licensing thing is where the regulation starts. It starts as a licensing. You need to get a license. Now we can track you. Now we can write regs against that, and tax against that, and fees against that. And we need to have your loan looked at by a government official. And now, right now, the most beautiful thing, because my frame of reference is government tried to put me out of business, and there are no builders in Calvert now. One guy's got a few lots left, but that's it. I think you're going to see more regulation in the private lending space. Okay. When is that coming? I don't know. Is it coming? It's too much money in flow now. It's too much money out there for it not to be looked at by government.
Gotcha.
So that I see, but it's going to be a while before that becomes punitive, like it became on the growth side,
right?
The growth and like land developing, things like that. But it's there's still a lot of opportunity. There's more people in it, and I haven't helped that situation by encouraging people to get it. You know, people have asked me, said, "Why are you getting all these guys in the business?" And you know, aren't you creating more competition? That's one way to look at it. Okay. The other way is that you're helping other people, and if you work together, you know, you give, but you get. I mean, it
right.
I don't see that as competition. I see that as paying it forward. I found a great business. You should look at it. You know, and again, I talk to mainly people that have some real estate experience. So it's not
Yeah. And the reality is, honestly, at least from my experience, most people are not going to take action. So, you know, so, you know, it's same thing with my mentorship. It's like, I mean, it's not, I mean, it's not a bad thing necessarily.
It's not a bad thing.
It may not be right for them. Right. But, I'll have people do a few sessions with me, and then it's like, this is more work than I realized, you know, and this, I don't have time for this. That's well, they learned. That's good.
Great. It's great. Absolutely great.
So, okay, awesome. Well, I mean, this has been really good. I got some rapid fire questions. Some of them do trip people up though. So, you ready for them?
Okay, rock and roll.
All right. What is one thing that people misunderstand about you, Brooke?
My obsession with paying it forward. And it came from a book called The Go-Giver, okay, which I,
You did. You gave me a copy and I read it. It's been recommended on my show before because that's one of my questions is what is a book that you can recommend? So,
Early on, the books that I recommend are two of them that I discovered in my early 20s or my 20s. And because I fell in love with Dale Carnegie, I taught some of the courses, the management course, the sales course. And the two books, and one, both of which were written in the 30s, How to Win Friends and Influence People,
Yeah,
and
it's a great
a
book.
companion book called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living.
Interesting.
And I found both of those. And then the next book was in 2006 when a consultant I was working with in Calvert, and he recommended The Go-Giver. And that just, and people, I think, sometimes don't understand, why are you doing these things? Why are you giving me your forms, your advice, and setting me up in business? Because it feels so damn good to help people.
That's I
It
love
just
that.
does.
Yeah,
It,
no,
I
that's
mean, and
great.
if you don't appreciate that, or you see it as competition, or why should I help the other person? They haven't done anything for me. That book will get you past that. And paying it forward is nothing. Back when they used to do, you had toll booths instead of the readers and stuff when you go there. I started doing these things called RACs, random act of kindness. You pay for the toll of the guy behind you, right? And sometimes you have to look in the rearview mirror to see the shock and understand. But I look at, helping people, not just in the money business, but anything that you've got that can help the next person do better.
I
I
love
think it's
that.
your obligation to just keep pushing it out there.
No, I mean,
And
I
it,
don't, I take issue with the whole self-made millionaire thing, to be honest with
Da.
you. It's like nobody is self-made
No,
at
forget that
all
crap.
in any
Forget
way,
that.
shape, or form. I mean, we do
No.
need to take ownership of our own situation, right? And your own thoughts and actions play a big role in things for sure. But if anybody who's successful in any way had some help along the way.
Absolutely. And so people will misunderstand my motivation for helping.
Makes sense. If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
Learn what a balance sheet and an income statement is. I didn't know what they were till much, much later in life, and I did not know, this is from a business standpoint, I did not know until I was in the hard money business the power of cash flow. Okay, not profit, not depreciation, not anything. I'm talking cash flow. And I struggled so heartily with that, mightily in the building business, because you'd have big lumps. You do 25, 30 deals a year, you'd have good cash flow, and then you'd starve to death to the next settlement type of, but that the power of consistent
Consistent cash flow income.
cash flow, I think out. Now, I'm not an accountant. Like I say, I didn't learn to read things till much later. But now that I've lived it, I would almost rather have flow than profit. Okay. I mean, obviously, at some point, you have to have profit to generate flow, but you can have profit and not flow, and you're going to be broke. Okay. Because I always say, look, because people will come to me and say, look, man, I need some short money because, I got settlements coming next week, but they haven't come in yet. I said, look, the minute you can't pay your bills, your people, whatever it is on Friday, you're out of business. I don't give a damn what you got coming in next week, because that's not certain. What is certain is that you can't make payroll on Friday. You can't pay that bill on Friday. You're out.
My father was a real estate agent for many decades. He still is, but you know, and he did well, but there were many times, because it's all commission based, you know, and it's a lot of ups and downs. There were many times it was very tight. So, you know, stressful and then great and then stressful. And
I've lived it, you know, and I saw my dad live it. And the money business, as you get it rolling, you know, no one or two loans ain't going to get you to the happy place. But as you grow it and get the thing going, it doesn't take a 250 loans either. Does not. But it has better regularity of flow. And that flow is, I can tell you from living the majority of having the majority of my career where I didn't have that consistency of flow, and now do. I understand you can literally take that to the bank. And I think there's nothing more important for a good night's sleep than consistent positive cash flow.
Yeah, and you must, that's really where you are now, because you're lending to the lenders. So you're not even, you're not doing like the points and, you know, extension fees and stuff like that. You're basically just, this is, I get X percent interest on this money each month, right? That's okay. That's great.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, how about something controversial that you see in the industry? Does anything stand out when I say that?
There, recently in Baltimore, there was a lot of fraud.
Right.
Okay, you heard about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. The appraisal thing. There's some opportunity for unscrupulous players. There, people say, well, hard money's risky. I'm not going to say it isn't. I mean, there's a risk there. But managed correctly, it's far less than what I've experienced in other businesses. But you have to be careful, and it invites people in to take advantage of other people. But I found in my life, and I know this sounds noble, but most people you can trust. Most people are trustworthy.
Right.
They just are. There's some bad actors. Are you going to get stung every now and then? For the returns that you're getting in this business, yeah, you're going to have a few bumps.
Right.
But run properly, you're not going to get stung too many times.
Yeah.
But there, it does invite. But banks get stung too. You can't avoid it.
Yeah.
So, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, if you... we're almost out of time here. If you were given $10 million tomorrow, personally, what would you do with it?
I'd pick this up right here. And by the time 1 o'clock came along, I got that on the street. I can make calls, you know, I can find a home for people. Yeah. Call my guys. Who needs, I know they need money now. Okay. So
do more of what you're already doing.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
Why wouldn't I?
Awesome. Well,
people say, well, you should diversify. You should, you know, okay, I'll worry about that next time around.
Yeah, we've already hit several of the other questions that I have just organically, naturally through the conversation. So this has been really, really good, Brooke. What's one question that you wish I'd asked that I haven't? Anything we haven't covered?
I don't think so. That's what I can think of right now. I mean, I'm sure there'll be a million other ones.
Yeah.
But I've enjoyed this. Thank you very much for
absolutely,
you know, asking the old guy, you know, to tell some stories, because this is the at this point in my life in particular, it's the money's great. I understand that. But the relationships, the money pales in comparison to the opportunities we've had in Baltimore to create really meaningful relationships. And I'll leave you with this comment, because when I retired. You know, I called all these guys and said, look, in a year, I need my money back. You know, I'm going out of it. I just, you know, because a lot of people were saying, it's at this point in your life, Brooke, it's you should think more about preservation than accumulation. But I can tell you, having lived it for 30 days, there is absolutely no fun in preservation. Accumulation is where you want to be. Okay.
Nice.
But I think the power of the relationships give your life a richness that supersedes anything else that I've ever experienced.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when I made those calls, I had three or four of these folks that we've helped and lend to and nurtured. And one gentleman called me and said, I just, you know, when I said I was retiring, he said, I want you to know that you have changed my children's life, my wife's life, my family's life forever. And I will be forever grateful.
That's amazing to
hear. And I had three people call me like that, that I mean, I don't know how much better you want it to be. I mean, after the call, I broke down, you know. Wow. I mean, I don't know if there's a richer reward in life,
right,
than to have someone make that statement that you have changed the trajectory.
That's incredible.
I don't know. It was no, I've never made money or had a greater satisfaction than having the, I mean, it was, yeah.
That's a so fantastic, final thought. That's really, really good. So,
yeah.
If somebody does want to reach out to you, Brooke, what's the best way to do that?
My email, just my phone number is great.
Okay.
Cause I text or whatever, and that's 301 943 1407.
Perfect.
Okay. Okay. And just text me, or, I'll get back to you. You know, hopefully I can help, but, I enjoy these conversations immensely.
Sounds great. I know you've already been very giving to me over the couple months we've known each other. So I appreciate that. So, we appreciate you spending your time, over the last, 45 to 60 minutes, whatever it's been. So appreciate it. Thank you so much, Brooke.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Jamie. It's great meeting you, and I look forward to helping in any way I can.
Sounds great. And to the listener, thank you for spending your most valuable resource with us, and that is your time. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Have a good day.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
All right, here's the deal. You work hard for your money. Isn't it about time you put your money to work for you? If you are an accredited investor, check out LabradorLending.com. Our Integrity Income Fund provides monthly cash flow from an investment backed by hard physical real estate. Our income fund, which is uncorrelated to publicly traded stocks and bonds, invests in first lien mortgage notes diversified by geography, property value, and borrower type. So you're not investing in one project. You're investing in a diversified portfolio of first lien mortgage notes. Our Integrity Income Fund aims to pay its investors monthly distributions at a preferred rate of return of 8% annually. Possibly the best part, though, the fund showcases a short 12-month commitment, so you can invest your capital today and have access to that capital in 1 year. Check it out today, LabradorLending.com. www.thebrokerage.com.